And like I say, there is no catch, but you do have to, you know, there's no point placing your business elsewhere if you can focus on half a dozen or more suppliers that are associated with the group, because that's where your benefits will come from. I would say look after number one. And that's from my own experience. Sometimes you can be, and I don't know how this is going to sound, but maybe too loyal.
And what is lurking in your current garage now?
Ah.
Is there anything in there?
Yeah. What's not to like?
Everyone's like, that doesn't make sense. And that's why it didn't make sense to me. I'm like, well, I've never. This episode is sponsored by Trade Choice Carpet and Flooring. Trade Choice are one of the largest independent distributors of floor coverings and products. They specialise in carpet tiles, carpets, vinyls, LVTs, screens, tools, everything you would need to run a flooring business. With 13 branches, including the Newcastle one that I visited, from Glasgow all the way down to Southampton. They've got 24-hour access ordering via their website. So if you want to set up an account or find your nearest branch, visit tradechoice.com. Now sit back, enjoy the show, and we look forward to seeing you here again soon. Welcome, John, to the UK Flooring Podcast. First question, who is John Richardson? Putting flooring to the side, what's your backstory, John?
Backstory, well, again, thank you for having me on. I fell into the flooring industry as a bit of a summer job, ripping up floors for a local flooring contractor. And I sort of got this job from he was the girlfriend's father, who was the warehouse manager. So, I was at college at the time, wasn't enjoying what I was doing. It was electrical engineering, found it really dull. All of a sudden, as a 17-year-old lad, you're getting a bit of cash in your pocket from the sort of your brown envelope, cash back in the day, of course. And it sort of started from there. So ripping up floors, then started an apprenticeship with this particular company. Within a couple of years, you know, I was sort of on my own. Commercial fitting, so it was quite tough on the knees. Did a lot of repairing wood floors, ripping up old school halls, churches, rescreeding the subfloor, sanding ceiling, all that type of stuff. So really sort of quite enjoyed it. But I think at an early stage, I sort of realised I don't want to be on my knees for the next 30 years. And sort of moved into retail then. And I was 26 years in retail, and sort of best part of 25 years with one company. From that, moved into manufacturing as a supplier, as representative. Ended up looking after the key accounts and national buying groups. And then from that, ended up being at the Associated Carpet Group. And that sort of, in a nutshell, has spanned 39 years in the industry. So yes, I've done a bit of everything, bit of fitting, bit of retail, bit of manufacturing, and now, like I say, just here at the Associated Carpet Group.
So for the uninitiated, who's ACG and what to you, what is a buying group to you? I think we were talking before the podcast started, I was in retail for 15 years and I hadn't really come across a buying group, but yes, I was from the wood side, so I wasn't selling any fluffy stuff at all.
Yeah.
But again, for the uninitiated, what's a buying group to you, and who's ACG?
Well, there's a number of buying groups, national buying groups, that people can look up. I mean, they all operate differently. Some are ran as businesses, some are member owned, like ourselves. We're a non-for-profit buying group. We're owned by the membership. What we do is we broker the best trade deals for our members. We use the combined turnover of our stores, and we have about 316 member stores. We use that combined turnover to broker the best deals for independent flooring retailers. So, you know, the man in the street that perhaps is only doing 10, 15, 20 grand with a supplier is potentially getting the pricing of someone that's doing 80, 100 grand turnover. So it's all about trying to offer benefits to the members that they wouldn't necessarily be able to get if they weren't a member of a buying group. We don't buy anything. ACG, we broker the best deals. So, yeah, buying group is probably one of those sort of names that is a misconception when it comes to ACG. But, yeah, so, you know, we're there to try and broker the best trade deals. We organise turnover rebates, promotional activity, stand subsidies, all sorts of other financial benefits and services for independent flooring retailers.
Okay, so how, again, speaking from an idiot's view of understanding it, if I was buying loads and, like, if I was buying 200 grand's worth of products and I was on quite a high discount already with my suppliers,
yeah,
is there still a benefit joining the group, or are you basing it on, because as you mentioned, different turnover, so at what point and what's the ideal client, would you say, to join the buying group, a buying group even?
Well, I mean, we have a real cross-section of members that go from, say, turnover through the suppliers associated with a group from, say, 80 or 100 grand up to those that are doing in excess of £1 million. Pricing benefit, you know, if you're doing considerable turnover, you may be on best pricing, you know, as you would expect to be. But for those that, you know, are doing the smaller turnovers, they wouldn't necessarily be on that. So there's a benefit for membership for those. We have rebates in place with all the suppliers. So based on your turnover, the suppliers at the end of a calendar year will then credit the members with a rebate for that business. So regardless of how big you are, you will still earn your rebate. We do promotional activity that runs alongside the rebate as well. So for 3 months of the year, we hold a promotion, which for members is almost like a double bubble. You know, they earn an additional value on top of their annual rebate. And then for us, we're very big about de-branding. So, you know, we have the Smart Choice brand, which is probably, in terms of all the buying groups, it's the largest sort of D brand available. We have over 4,000 products that have been de-branded by the group. We have a consumer-facing website that backs up all the products. We have our Unitree available, and we work with either our own Unitree or, you know, we can de-brand manufacturers Unitree. And that's becoming more and more relevant to independent retailers because, you know, their margins are getting hacked at from not over high street comparison, you've got internet comparison. And now with the increase of all the trade counters, you know, margins are being chipped away by man in a van. So, you know, with the D brand that the group does offers protection for those retailers as well. You know, not only does it help secure an order, it helps retain margin. So there's all sorts of benefits above and beyond just price that, regardless of size, a retailer can benefit from.
So the de-branded, is that under a, like a, does that go under the retailer's brand? So would that be like John's Flooring, like on the cart, like on the, let's say the sample books, or is it under like a hidden brand, if that makes sense? How does that work? Well, it's a massive advocate of de-branding stuff. So I'm not sometimes popular by some manufacturers, but, you know, if I was going to open a carpet shop personally, and yes, people might have different opinions, which they're very welcome to have, I would have completely unbranded products and I would have selected them with my experience. I'd select my margin of what I wanted to earn and to do and protect myself from a competition. The small boys are the big boys. So that's why I'm really interested. So how does that look? You know, what do the stands have on them? Do they have something else?
Well, it's, I mean, the group branding, the ACG branding, is Smart Choice. So that is the brand. And like I say, we've recently updated the consumer-facing website page. So everything we are launching now backs up in-store displays. So that brand is either available from Group Unitary. We have our own units that we produce, wall units, lecterns. We do tombolas, but the appetite for tombolas is sort of diminished. So it's generally wall units and lecterns. On our Unitary, members can select from a basket of products provided by a number of suppliers then of what they, you know, want to put on these displays. Alternatively, because, you know, we can't have a never-ending basket of product within the group on our Unitary, we'll de-brand suppliers' Unitary. So it will be on their units, but it'll be all Smart Choice branded. So that Smart Choice branding covers, obviously, your Unitary, the pattern books, the sampling. Everything now going out is QR coded. So the QR code takes you now to the Smart Choice website. On there, there's room visualizers. You know, the consumer can look at other colors, similar products, family categories. You know, it's, you know, we've really invested here because we see that, you know, retailers, you know, margins are being eroded by what's happening in the marketplace. So things like this, as you say, help protect a retailer and help them secure the sale and earn more money.
I'm assuming if said retailer wanted to remove Smart Choice from the wall units and just put, you know, I don't know, the Apple Bridge range or something, I'm assuming have you got no problem with them doing that? If they just had that, are they allowed to do that?
Yeah, I mean,
you know, because if you did that with a certain big carpet brand, they might be a little bit upset that you've took the branding off. But
look,
you know,
it's not a stipulation of membership that members have to have the Smart brand. One thing about ACG is we are non-intrusive, so membership is by association. So if you come on board as a member, we do not tell you how to run your business. That's not our place. What we try and do is put benefits in front of you that you take, you know, from that portfolio that benefit you. We have some members that want the manufacturer's brands in store. We have other members that have completely de-branded. We do, you know, significant numbers with our suppliers. And to them, you know, it doesn't really matter whether our members are selling it as Smart Choice or as, you know, as their brands. You know, as long as they're seeing the business, that's great. But we certainly don't, it's not a condition of membership that someone has to do that. If someone wanted, going back to your question, if they wanted to brand it as a store, then we have associations with companies that would be able to help them to do that. It can be quite costly when you go about trying to do that independently, which is why as a group, you know, all the branding, the Unitary is all subsidized to members because we bear the brunt of the cost of doing that. So, you know, once someone invests in Unitary and a range, if that range isn't particularly working, then they have access to free sampling to be able to replace those ranges on our Unitary. So, yeah, you know, we're trying to take the pain out of doing it. We're in a far better position, perhaps, to invest in the brand than perhaps someone just doing it independently in their own store. So, you know, why not take advantage of that? You know, that would an independent, you know, set up their own website and then have to shop brand that website? It's a costly thing to do. So, like I say, it's a big benefit of membership to be able to offer that to retailers.
Yeah, no, I think I will probably come on to everyone's thinking, oh, this sounds amazing, but there's got to be a cost. And that's actually how we met one of your members, a reasonable sized retailer, said, you need to speak to John about this buying group, love de-branded stuff. And we pay, I was going to ask you, but I know what it is. Is it 1,200 quid a year for a retailer to join? Is that right? Is that, I got that figure right?
975 quid a year plus VAT. So that is the subscription. Subscription year runs 1st of September to the 31st of August. And we do it then because most retailers sick of bills in January because they've got all Christmas to pay for. So it's less painful at that point of the year. Because we're non-for-profit, we run the group from the subscription. So everything we try and do and implement is for the members' benefit. We're not in it to try and make a buck. And that differentiates us from other buying groups that are run as businesses. So, you know, like I say, everything we do is for the membership. So, you know, ultimately I work for the membership. So, you know, I report to them. I mean, the board that we have in place are all members and all retailers. So, you know, we're very careful with what we do, but we're very focused in our approach to what we think will be beneficial, you know, to the group and to members overall. So,
yeah, and that's how so it was 1,000 quid to join, and then the guys I spoke to say we're getting 4, 5, 6 grand back in rebates by just buying the products we know and trust. And I'm like, well, this sounds like witchcraft. This, and they're like, no, it literally is that simple. We buy products we love, we get supported, we put 1,000 quid in, and we get, I can't remember the exact figure, but it was around the sort of 4 to 5 grand back by, you know, I thought, well, that's a good investment. 1,000 quid in, you get 4 grand back out the other end. And then you get debranded products, and you get a selection of, you know, and then you get support as well. So I thought, oh, wow. And that's why we had one of your board directors come and suss us out here at Cockrell & Co., which was great to have her here, great retail business. So we're obviously proud members to supply the group now, which super proud to do, and hopefully, and it seemed to be a good correlation between, which I've just realised another question there, at least three ACG members have been through our courses here at Cockrell & Co., but the group isn't for everyone. So who isn't the group for, John?
Who isn't the group for? Right. I mean, you were saying there, obviously, for a subscription, you know, some members are getting back. And I mean, they can get back significant rebates, you know, on top of all the benefits. The key to the group, really, is placing your business with the suppliers that support the group. In doing so, you earn rebate. So firstly, you have to have those accounts in place. So if your business is currently set up, you know, as an independent retailer, and you're placing 80% of your business through wholesale, the group isn't for you, because you're not going to earn any, you're not going to get out of it potentially what you could. You know, if you're going to become a member of ACG, really, you know, that's the focus. We want you to maximize your membership. Otherwise, you know, why bother? You know, it's cost you money to be a member. So I suppose really, you know, if you've got the supplier accounts, you're doing business through them, the rebates we set in place earn you money back for doing nothing different than what you're currently doing. I often get, where's the catch? Because it does sound too good to be true. You know, I'm paying £1,000 and I can get 6 grand back. Where's the catch, and what's in it for you? There is no catch if you are placing business directly with suppliers. There isn't a catch. What's in it for us is, you know, by increasing membership, we increase the group's turnover with suppliers. In doing so, it means we can negotiate harder, which means we can put better deals in front of the membership. So, you know, that's what's in it for us. And like I say, there is no catch, but you do have to, you know, there's no point placing your business elsewhere if you can focus on half a dozen or more suppliers that are associated with the group, because that's where your benefits will come from.
So I understand as well, you've got to have bricks and mortar. Shop. You can't be. So what about, what's your opinion on mobile showrooms? Have you been asked that before?
What, for group, you mean, or just in general?
So let's say someone, hypothetically, someone built a 20 grand mobile carpet van with a salesman inside. So it's not just someone with a work van with a couple of swatches in. a dedicated vehicle that went out as a mobile showroom. Has that ever been asked to the group?
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, we don't, you know, the sort of criteria for sort of membership is, you know, we don't sign anybody up. We try and qualify retailers so that there's a benefit to the group in terms of increasing turnover, but the retailer gets, you know, out of it more than he puts into it. So we would normally look at bricks and mortar, at least a couple of years trading, to already have in place, you know, supplier accounts, you know, half a dozen supplier accounts, something like that. And ideally, you know, if they're doing 80 to 100 grand with those suppliers, I know that the retailer will at least break even on subscription, but more than likely becomes self, you know, membership becomes self-funding because you're covering your costs of subscription and then you're earning additional rebate or promotional activity on top of that. So that's the sort of, you know, the financial sort of criteria we would look at. Yes, there is always the odd occasion that we would look at and we would discuss then, you know, whether we think it's a benefit taking a member on. So it's not set in stone, but we'll always have a discussion around it. But what we also try and do, and again, this can be slightly different to other groups, is we tend to have one member per town. So the reason we do that is if that retailer is investing in the Smart Choice brand, what we don't want is then the consumer to walk 100 yards down the street and then get a price comparison on the same stuff from another store. So, you know, we try and look at it strategically and give members some protection, albeit there's nothing in place that says, well, you've got a 6 mile radius. You go into the middle of Birmingham, you could have two members 3 miles apart and they would never have heard of each other. So, you know, we assess, you know, membership on an individual basis, but we do consider where we have, you know, already member stores. So, and if it's deemed that a new application is too close or is in conflict to an existing member, then unfortunately, we wouldn't be able to take that retailer on board.
Brilliant, really, because it's kind of, you get form of exclusivity, you can make your own brands, you get rewarded for selling your own products, and you get access to the best prices, and it costs you a grand a year.
Yeah. So what's not to like?
Everyone's like, that doesn't make sense. And that's why it didn't make sense to me. I'm like, well, I've never, you know, we used to buy, obviously it was only hardwood flooring, but, you know, we'd buy direct and stuff, but it was just not, see, I'm assuming it's come from there. And I know you have woods and you have other products as well.
That's right.
As part of the group, but it's like, you know, when we were buying stuff, it was just where you bought direct from X or Y, or and then there were stipulations of what you could put in a certain place in the shop and had to hit your rebate so you didn't have to pay your stand and all. Yeah, so thankfully we're out of, not thankfully, wrong word. We are now out of that now, but, you know, but it's good to learn more. So is there any plans with the group this year that's new that you can reveal, or is anything that, you know, hasn't been, you know, is there anything, any news that would be valuable on the podcast that's, you know, even in the last 24 months?
Well, we're quite a social group. You know, we do like to try and get members together. And, you know, that's been not a challenge since COVID, but, you know, it's people gaining that confidence to get out and about and mix with other people. But, you know, we do have a few social events which we tie in with suppliers, so they would be sponsored by a particular supplier. So I think this year we've got an off-roading and a clay pigeon event. We have dinner that evening, and it obviously includes bed and breakfast. We've got a gin tasting, which is becoming a favourite, a murder mystery event. And then the biggie for the group is, you know, we're the only group that really does a proper trade show. So we have our own show down at Warwick University campus there. They have some conference centre that we use and have used for a number of years. And that's supported by, you know, the group's main suppliers. They will exhibit there. But the beauty of having our own trade show is we can tailor that show and any benefits specifically to our members. So we'll have, you know, if you attend the show, there will be a subsidy from the following year's subscription. We'll do subsidized hotel accommodation for the Saturday night of the show, because we tend to have the show on a Saturday. We have on-the-day deals, so all the suppliers tend to come with, an incentive for members attending the show, and only for those members that attend the show. So it's, you know, it's not something that people think, oh, well, if I don't go, I'll be offered it a couple of weeks down the line. No, no, no. You attend the show, you get the deal. So, and a biggie, you know, we do a massive subsidy on Unitary, on the Smart Choice brand in Unitary. And, you know, that was really successful last year in that, you know, we shifted over 300 units, point of sale units at the last show. And that's, for some suppliers, you know, was fantastic. It just makes it all worthwhile, you know, by doing these things and exhibiting there. So, So, like I say, we tend to have all sorts of things going on. In fact, we've just done another deal at, another social event with a supplier, which we're going to tie in a factory tour. And then we're being hosted at some Flight Club. So I don't know if you've ever heard of these, but it's a darts-orientated evening that's team games and all this type of stuff. So, you know, that's proved to be quite popular. So yes, you know, it's more, you know, we like to get members mixing, because you have that networking aspect. Yeah. So you can mingle with the suppliers, you can mingle with other sort of retailers that are, you know, of the similar thinking. So, and out of those discussions, you know, people build friendships and, you pick up business ideas. And so, yeah, it's good. You know, we're a real friendly group to be a part of.
I'm assuming the trade show that's yours, is that member only? You couldn't come and just suss out if you... Yeah, so you couldn't attend that on the proviso, oh, I'd like to join, so I'm going to come and suss it out first. They'd have to become a member to get even access to that, or...
Ideally so, yes. I mean, if we needed to host one or two retailers at that show, if they wanted to come along and see what the group's about, we could probably manage that. But it's not something we generally advertise. It is pretty much just a member event, you know, a member show. So,
okay. So they have to be pre-qualified that they're serious to join. You're not just going to open the doors and charge £20 on the door. Come and have a look at this. No, it's not another Harrogate, basically, even though the Harrogate show is brilliant, but yeah, it's more dedicated for the members. No, I love that. Brilliant. Right. We're going to move on to some more flooring industry questions, John. What is the biggest issue with the UK flooring industry right now, in your opinion?
Well, okay, this is my opinion. This isn't the opinion of the group as such. But I think a couple of the biggest issues we're seeing now is certain wholesalers circumnavigating bricks and mortar retailers to do business. And ultimately, we see that they will probably be supplying direct to consumer. So they're going to cut out the bricks and mortar retailer. The other biggie, and, you know, this is not a new subject, is fitters. Is attracting people into the industry, to become installers, whether that's hard flooring or whether that's carpet. The trade has been devalued over the years by the big multiples doing the fitting free aspect. You know, you would never ring a plumber up or a joiner and go, oh, you're going to do it free. You know, it is a skilled trade and should be recognized as one. So,
free fitting on your boiler.
So I think that's the because the problem. You know, I sort of came into this as a 17-year-old, and yeah, you know, I was ripping up floors, and it was a manual job, and it was what it was. You know, a lot of the younger people nowadays, they're very IT focused, so they're not really driven into what would be seen as a manual job. And, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, fitting carpet is not an easy job. You know, you've got to get an 8x5 thick piece of Saxony up two flights of stairs into a, you know, a loft conversion. It's hard work. And, you know, I think sometimes that puts people off coming into the industry, albeit you can earn a very good living out of being a carpet fitter or an LVT fitter. So, yeah, I think that's probably the problem is, you know, if we don't have fitters, how do we get the stuff on the floor?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons why we went to the US to see how they do it. And they've really interestingly, again, with Coplico, we're going to develop this and because it's one of the most talked about subjects in the podcast about the lack of installers or quality installers coming through. And the USA, they actually do the apprenticeship bit and all that, but then they also give you stages of, and they kind of dangle a carrot of income that, you know, if you're a master installer, you could earn this. If you are a bricks and mortars retailer, you could earn this. And we all know it could be unicorns and rainbows of how much we could earn or what we couldn't. But yeah, hypothetically, if we follow the process and we do a really good job and sell quality products and give a world-class service, that is actually true. You could actually earn more than that. You could earn less. And they do this whole sort of path from apprentice all the way through to like even like flooring assessor or QS or whatever. So you can go through the ranks at different levels and go off in different directions. But they also, they have like a button where they push of like what your expected income could be. And I think the younger generation coming through, they could go, oh, so if I did a good job and I could fit carpet and LVT really well, I can earn $100,000 a year. Yeah. You know, it's like, is that real? You know what I mean? You know, and you can. And some people might earn a lot less and some people might earn a lot more. And you know, it gives them like a benchmark of what could happen, which I suppose is like, you could do it in plumbing, you could do it in, I don't know, opening restaurants. You could do, you know, you could have a projected income, but that's, so they're sexing it up a bit, which I love in America. It's a little bit Americanized, but we're working with a couple of different training partners to get this thing through. So really valid point. Love that. Best bit of advice you've ever received in your career, 39 years, John?
I mean, they are coming difficult now, aren't they? Difficult questions. I would say,
oh, yes,
the advice, I would say look after number one. And that's from my own experience. Sometimes you can be, and I don't know how this is going to sound, but maybe too loyal. You know, I was in retail with one company for nearly 25 years. And, you know, I'd worked predominantly 6 days a week plus for that sort of business. And the hope was it was a family business of nearly 50 years trading. It was a good business. And you know, we had a good reputation. We had, you know, a fair number of fitters. And I always sort of perceived that, you know, the there was no relations coming into the business from the family. You know, I was always thinking, yeah, at one point, this is going to be mine. I'll be running it. I'll take it on. Da, 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 da. That business got into financial difficulty and ultimately went into administration. Out of that, you realize that you're just a number. You know, you've almost got to be ruthless in thinking that, have I got a long-term future here? Is the loyalty a two-way thing? Or, you know, people say if you drop dead, your job will be advertised the day after, you know, that type of thing. And I wish, in a way, I'd been a little bit more driven earlier on. Like I say, I was almost institutionalized within this company because, you know, 24 years plus with one company, you know, you don't know anything else. You know, you've not had an interview in 20-odd years and things like this. So to have to go out then into the marketplace and then try and get another job, you know, it was a scary thing. But through a number of circumstances, you know, I found myself where I am. And albeit, you know, the journey's been difficult at times, you know, I've been made redundant twice in my career and been out of work for sort of 5 months at a time. And financially, that's a strain when you've got a family, you've got the mortgage and everything else. I wouldn't change any of that struggle because it's led to this point in time. So my only sort of, I suppose, regret is that I perhaps didn't take the jump sooner, if you know what I mean, of my own fruition rather than it being forced upon me.
And do you think, again, I don't think there's anything such as regrets. There's only learning, in my opinion. Yeah. 5 years into your career with that job, with that company. If you could turn the clock back, would you have set your own flooring shop up, or are you quite happy with working for someone else? Never asked that, but I just thought I'd throw it in. Again, it's not about regrets. It's about if you'd have the opportunity to have your name above the door, would you have done it?
Opportunity is the key word there, because 5 years into that role, say, you've got a young family, you've got a mortgage. It's that risk and return aspect, isn't it? So if there was opportunity, yes, perhaps I would have done. But say the key thing is opportunity, because, you know, I'm also fairly level-headed, and, you know, you have to weigh up the risk and return. So, yeah, at that stage, not knowing what I know now, probably not, because it was a very good business. We were moving forward. I was taking on more and more responsibility within the business. You know, it for me at that time, it looked a great career path, you know. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, yeah, difficult one. Yeah.
Oh, love it. Worst bit of advice you've ever received?
Oh, God. Worst bit of advice.
If you had to give it to someone else, to give it to your younger self, what would be the... Or if you, you know, it's if,
you know,
what's the worst bit of advice you've ever
had? I've spent money on cars and bikes that I perhaps shouldn't have done. So, you know, the old...
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that, John.
You know, all that type of thing, you know.
Yeah.
I could have been maybe a little bit more careful in my early years with some of the money I spent. So...
So, yeah. So I'm going to tweak the question then, John. What is the worst decision you've made with something powered by petrol?
An E-Class for savings.
I'd like to know this. what engine?
I loved it. I had a lovely car. So it was an E-Class Mercedes. I was 22. I was earning good money. I had it 8 years.
Which engine was it?
22,000 miles in it. You know, it was just a trinket. So really, I didn't need that car. It was a toy, and I got it out at weekends, you know what I mean? So it was nice to have, but yeah, perhaps my older self going back to my younger self would have gone, do you really need to do that? You know, invest it in the house, do something like that. That's going to earn you money rather than, you know, lose value.
What was the specification and engine to the E-Class?
Oh, blimey, now you...
What colour?
It was a dark, sort of graphite grey. I put some nice 17-inch OZ alloys on it. I can't think of the engine size. It was probably a 2 litre or 2.5 litre petrol at the time. So, yeah, he was nice. He was nice. Just looking over the bonnet and seeing that Mercedes badge at the end, it was nice. So,
and what is lurking in your current garage now?
Ah.
Is there anything in there?
Yeah. well, you know, I have a company vehicle, so that's recently changed. I've recently moved over to a pickup truck. Number of reasons. Benefit in kind and the ability for the company to be able to claim and tax back, the back and all that type of business. So it made financial sense for the group to be able to do that. So I love that. It's great. Moving from a sort of streamlined estate car, it's something completely different. But, you know, I'm not the smallest of blokes, so there's plenty of room in the cab. It's comfy. I can do 4 or 5 hour drives at a time, and I'm getting out, and I'm not, you know, in a crumpled mess. Personally, I've got a nice Harley Davidson at home. So I've got a Road Glide Special, one of the Tourers that's basically my pride and joy. So I hate the winter months because it's all packaged away and kept warm and lovely, ready for the spring to come. So when spring comes, it's my way of letting off sort of steam. If I've had a stressful day, I can get the bike out in the evening, go for an hour's ride through the countryside, completely forget everything that's been going on in the day. And I come back, and as the words of my wife, you're a completely different bloke. So, yeah, that's my guilty pleasure is my bike.
When you were choosing your company car, did electric come into the conversation? And did you flatly refuse because you were a petrol head?
You know what? It didn't suit me because where I live, I sort of live in a sort of a cul-de-sac type of scenario. So you cannot park. I don't have a drive. We have private parking spaces and things like this. Okay. So there was no facility to enable me to plug in an electric. Secondly, you know, I can do 300-400 miles in one trip. I don't want to be sat about trying to recharge the damn thing before I can get home.
No.
I am a petrol head. I'm not going to go too much into electric vehicles because I'd go on a rant, but I think they have a purpose and it didn't suit mine.
No. Love that. If I were at 12:15, if I give you £1,000 now and you've got to spend it by 5 o'clock, what are you going to spend it on?
£1,000.
Anything you want.
Anything I want. If I've got to be really sensible, I've got a service coming up and an MOT on my bike, so that would be the first bit. I don't need any accessories for it, so I would... God, I don't know. Buy something for the ladies in my life. So... It's go, the only way I can get...
I was going to say, your missus might listen to this and go, oh, what about me? What about me? So,
yeah, do you know what? I'm not that desperate for anything. You know what I mean? I'm at that point in my life that I'm fairly content with what I've got. Don't get me wrong, you know, I've still got ambition, but, you know, I'm not out there screaming that, you know, I'm not a young man that wants this or wants that. You know, I'm quite happy with my lot, so.
No, so get the bike serviced and a nice meal out. And
yeah, something
like that. Brilliant. What is the least favourite part of your current role at ACG?
Least current? Well, this is a tricky one because I don't think I've got one. It sounds really cheesy, this, but I thoroughly enjoy what I do. It's so different because every day's something else is going on. You know, I've had to sort of get involved and learn marketing aspects. You know, I've written articles for the trade press. You know, you can get out and see members, you know, you're dealing with suppliers, different products, new products. There isn't really a downside to it. So, you know, like I say, if I could have reached this point sooner in my career, I would have done now, having had hindsight. So I really do enjoy what I do. So, because it is so varied. We have a lovely, you know, we've got a team of girls in the office. We've got, you know, they're lovely. We have a great relationship. It's all good.
No, fabulous. I'll let you have that one. three people you would love a pint with, dead or alive. Doesn't matter who they are. But three people you'd like to share a pint with.
Bob Marley.
And why?
I grew up with reggae. And I just think, you know, his message and music has... you know, impacted people for generations. You know, it's one, I mean, it's a bit apt because of the new film's out, of course. But yeah, it's just something I've always sort of listened to. I sort of grew up with reggae and, you know, he was the artist of the time. But the one regret is I never got to see him live, but hey-ho, these things are. Three people. So I'd have to go with, say... someone like the Craze, just because I'd just be completely sort of, you know, sat there just listening to what goes on in this underworld. I just think it'd be really, not that I'm sort of saying,
you know, Reggie already
criminals and they were murderers and stuff, but I just thought, yeah, if I'm going to sit in and listen at someone around the table, someone like that. Third person.
You can only have Reggie or Ronnie on the Craze. You'll have to choose. Can I have both of them? Because that'd be four.
Third one. Do you know what? I don't know. If it could be anybody, saying this, you know, this doesn't have to be a personality. I'd probably have my mum. So,
yeah,
you know, she shaped me for the best part of her life. You know, I've lost her recently, last 18 months. So, yeah, I'd have my mum.
Great table. I love that. And the penultimate question, which everyone hates, is, John, what is currently holding you back?
Ooh, holding me back? From what?
Yeah. You take that question however you want.
If it's losing weight, my love of good food. if it's bending down, it's my bad knees. Holding me back. I don't know, because I don't feel as if, career-wise, I don't feel as if I am potentially being held back.
No.
Hey, the political outlook at the minute is a bit worrying. So, but whether that's classed as holding me back, I don't think so. It is what it is with that, isn't it? But I don't really feel that I am.
You're not being held.
No.
Brilliant.
I don't know whether
there's no right or wrong answer on this show whatsoever. We just like to sling the questions in, and I wouldn't say catch people out. It's like, right, on your feet. What is the number one way to reach out to you? So if there's retailers or people that just want to know more about the group, what is the number one way to reach out to you and the team?
Well, there's
the process.
I mean, you know, we have the ACG website. So you've got acgcarpets.com. There's some information on there that you can email into the office if you're interested in membership. You can either contact me on my own email if you wish, which is John, J-O-N, at acgcarpets.com. We've got the smartchoicecarpets.co.uk website if people want to have a nosy at what we do in the debranding. I mean, you know, if people just went online and searched the Associated Carpet Group, there's all the contact details there. One thing I'd like to make, which I don't think we have covered yet. People think that through ACG membership, they have to change the way they currently do business. And, you know, for us, membership is through association only. So, you know, if a retailer comes on board, they currently do not change or don't have to change anything they're currently doing. You don't have to change the way you order, your relationship with the suppliers. You know, there's no central ordering hub that you have to place all your orders through. You know, membership really is through association. So with us, you know, we're non-intrusive, as I think we've said. You know, you can have membership and all the benefits that go with it without the misconception that, you know, you've got to toe a particular line. So I don't think we covered that. And I think that the hardest thing, you know, I've been a salesman all my life. I was on the markets at 10, you know, we used to have a market stall. The hardest thing I've had to sell, if sell is the right word, is group membership. You know, you're having a conversation with a retailer and you can see that the benefit to them would be significant, but they just don't get it. And it's a shame because...
No.
You know, I'll walk away from these stores and I'm scratching my head. I'm just sort of going, you know, they're in the camp of, you know, where's the catch and what's in it for you, Brigade? And it really isn't about that. You know, we are about, you know, trying to benefit bricks and mortar retailers and enable independents. You know, most of our members are family businesses. You know, we're not trying to take away their independence. We're trying to put benefits in front of them to make their business stronger. So,
no, I'll back that, John. You know, we've got to run this podcast with integrity, and we met through referral through people coming to Cochrane Co to do training and do our Floor and Freedom course, and then they were like, someone would tell me like what you've just said, and I'm like, well, I said, where's the catch? And then I rang someone that was also part of the group that hasn't been on Floor and Freedom that I've known for 20 years, and I'm like, you know, tell me about ACG or buying group, and he went, mate, it's a no-brainer. And again, this isn't to blow smoke. This is literally I needed to do my own, let's say, pre-qualification, understand what it was about and how it worked. And I rang someone completely out of like the Cochrane & Co. environment. But the response was the same. And I've got someone round the corner from here. I've got people in Ipswich and all different parts of the country that don't even know each other. And that's why we got you on the show, because I think it's important. I think if carpet retailers, flooring retailers are not aware of these things, and if we're supporting, and again, some suppliers may not like it, but you know, I love the de-branding. I love protecting yourself, protecting your margin. And some suppliers want you to jump through a hoop at a certain height. And sometimes, you know, it's your business. If you want to jump through that hoop, that's totally cool. But being dictated to by your supplier that you must do this and you feel trapped in a corner, I don't think it's the greatest way to execute business. So I really thank you for coming on. Great podcast. Glad we got petrol into the conversation, because don't rarely do that. But as a fellow petrol head, I'm glad we got it in there. So thank you very much, John, for coming on.
No, it's a bit of pleasure. Thanks very much.
This podcast is run and produced by Cockerill & Co. To find out what we do, visit the website cockerillandco.co.uk, or you'll find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook.